Hello, Malik Mayo. Welcome again to KABU.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Malik Mayo is a longtime black civil rights and revolutionary socialist and labor activist, made his living as an aviation mechanic, co-wrote the books The Assassination of Malcolm X, also Angola, The Hidden History of Washington's War, and contributed a chapter to the book The National Black Independent Political Party, an important step forward for blacks and other American workers. He's now a contributing editor with Against the Current on the advisory board of Links International Journal of Socialist Renewal. He has published several pieces recently in Green Left Weekly and Against the Current, and recently published several articles, Why Critical Race Theory is Important and In Defense of Being Awake, which of course Malik's pun is on being woke, that is being progressive, in defense of progressivism. So, Malik, earlier this month, the authoritarian far right achieved another significant victory in their campaign to eliminate teaching anything that contradicts their white supremacist gospel when they forced the resignation of Claudine Gay, aided by a set of super rich donors who threatened the university with withholding many millions of dollars. And before that, last year, the far right had shaken up the entire public school system, winning legislation in many Republican-controlled states that made it a crime to teach about racism that the right insists no longer exists. In each case, it was front-page news denounced by teachers' unions and the ACLU as full of misinformation and lies. But the authoritarians, they laughed it off because it was serving them pretty well. At the end of the interview, we'll discuss how they can be defeated. We do have potential strengths, but first tell us what's happening. Tell us about the right-wing aims and means and context in which they're doing it.
Yes, thanks. It's important that we understand that the attack on Gay and other university presidents and professors is rooted in a long-term campaign of the far right, the mega Republicans and conservatives that began soon after the civil rights laws were adopted in the late 60s. It's taken different names, but today its main name is Against Affirmative Action, or what they call DEI, which is shorthand for diversity, equity, and inclusion in all forms of life. Since Claudine Gay was the first African-American woman to be president of Harvard, one of the oldest university in the United States, they had all called her unqualified because she was there because of affirmative action, or DEI as they call it, and she shouldn't be in that position. They took advantage of the campaign on college campuses around support of Palestine in the current war, Israel against the Palestinian people, and used that to go after her and others, saying they were allowing people to be anti-Semitic, which was not the case. They were talking about free speech and the right of anyone to express their opinions. So they took that issue. A right-wing House Republican committee went after her and the other presidents of Ivy League schools and demanded basically that they denounce these efforts and to basically get people fired from their jobs if they were professors or students lose their scholarships. And she refused to go along with that. And one of the most hedge fund Harvard alumni who led this charge along with the MAGA Republicans even went so far as to say that she only got a position because she was black, because of a race-related curriculum. Now, it's important to point out, and this is true with most African-Americans and others who get jobs in higher academia or anywhere, they're highly qualified, have to be. Whatever mistakes or anything they may have said or didn't do, one charge was plagiarism, which was not really true. But whatever charge that's made against them, they always come back to one issue. They're not qualified because of their skin color or their ethnic background. They're so arrogant, they even said afterwards, that we took her scalp, which anyone knows American history, the killing of indigenous people, which was the first real Holocaust in this country, they know what that meant. Unfortunately, this campaign is spreading, but fortunately, Gay herself has pushed back. And I'd like to just briefly quote a New York Times op-ed she wrote a couple of days ago, which I think summarizes the essence of what's going on. She said, "The campaign against me was about more than one university and one leader. This was merely a single skirmish in a broader war to unravel public faith in pillars of American society. Campaigns of this kind often start with attacks on education and expertise because these are the tools that best equip communities to see through the propaganda, end of quote. And that's exactly what it is. This campaign, which most people may be familiar with what the Governor DeSantis did in Florida when he went after what he called wokeism, was directed at ending affirmative action in the Florida school system. But it quickly spread to public libraries. He even went after Disney Corporation because it defended the right of gays to function in society. So it starts with public education. It spreads to other institutions. And the ultimate goal is to return to a society where white supremacy, not openly stated, but is in practice, is the rule of the land. And that any black, Latino, any woman, any gay person is put in the back, is told to shut up and accept that reality. So in my view, this Claudine Gay situation helped highlight what's been going on for the last several years and opens the door to change. Now, it's important to recognize that all this also happened, not just because of Florida, because what the U.S. Supreme Court did last year, July 2023, when the court ruled that we are a quote-unquote colorblind country, which is not true. As a colorblind country, you can't have diversity. You cannot have affirmative action. You cannot have any recognition of the reality of American history. You cannot explain that the founding fathers did not include black people since they were slaves in the Constitution. It did not include indigenous people who were not even considered people. They were not even allowed to be called citizens till the 20th century. So that was the founding fathers. That was their view of America. It was the settlers from Europe. They were the only citizens. Everybody else were not. And then even if you became a citizen later, you were second class. So this is a continuation of the founding of this country. We've had pushbacks, and you get some gains, then they fight back. So now we're in a new stage, as Bill said. We'll talk more about what should be done later in this discussion. But this fight around higher education, public education, is very much tied to the broader fight for equality in the United States.
Bill Resnick here for the Old Mold Variety Hour. I'm talking to Malik Mia, a longtime black civil rights and revolutionary socialist and labor activist. We're discussing the right-wing attack now on the public schools, on public universities, and in fact, in government as a whole, and particularly, of course, of the people who made the civil rights revolution in the 60s, and they're trying to eliminate it, the authoritarian right. Let's talk about that a little bit, that the right is on a roll and believes it will not be defeated, and they have developed a ground game of determined people who will, in fact, go at every school board member who doesn't like their line. They make life miserable for anybody that they point the finger at, and it's really intimidating teachers, even in the universities with better salaries, especially people with mortgages and precarious positions, get intimidated, and in fact, they either change their line or have to leave. Talk about the position of those people who have been trolled and who are then receiving death threats. It's very intimidating, and it forces people into positions that they have really very little choice and really standing up to the right. Tell us about that and the pressures that people feel.
Yes, and I think it's important that some of the people they've gone after, like Claudine Gay, in the higher academics, you know, she has her job. She was a professor, still is a professor at Harvard. She has tenure. She has more protection than many others. In fact, she was the dean of the largest school at Harvard before she got her position. And she also taught at Stanford. So she had all the credentials and records, and they went after her. And part of what the media doesn't report, part of the campaign against her is to use the N-word constantly, the smear. So the racism is there openly about who she is. But then think about somebody who's just an untenured professor at a university or city college. They're in a much weaker ground even to speak out like she has. They can lose their position overnight. Even if it's a public school, they can be forced out and not be allowed to continue to teach. So as you said, many people, this is their income, the way they live. And so while many of them are fighting back no matter what, even if they lose their positions, a lot of people had their jobs taken away over the Palestine issue and over affirmative action, which is a positive thing that they're willing to fight. But on the other hand, as you said, people have to live. How do they survive? I know in Florida, many professors and others who were in like African studies or other kind of programs have had to leave the state. They just applied and went to other states, to other colleges. They couldn't just stay there since they were going to lose their positions. Well, you can only do that up to a certain extent. Most people just, what they do is self-discipline themselves. That is, they don't talk about the issue. They just keep quiet. They won't tell their students why it's wrong, what the governor is doing or what the Congress is doing. So that self-discipline, self-censorship is a big problem. And you see that in public libraries too. If a librarian doesn't like having 100 books taken out of the library and speaks out, they can lose their job. So part of this whole campaign is to force people to stay silent, not to resist, and hopefully that's how they win. But again, lesson of history is that can only work for so long. You know, you can do that, but if people begin to say no and to fight back, you can change the dynamic. And I think some of that is already beginning to happen. The teachers unions have done it in public school, but they, you know, more has to be done because the right wing goes to public. They do recalls against people once they get elected. They'll go recall people, not just in public education, in all positions. Here in, I'm in Northern California, in the San Francisco area, we have several recalls petitions going on to try to take out people who are not really radicals. They're just people who are more liberal than what they should be in the eyes of the right. So the one tactic they use here is to start getting petitions to go after people, even if they just got elected. I mean, literally, it could be elected on Monday, then Tuesday, there's a recall petition put out. So there's many weapons the right is using to try to silence anyone who speaks up. And, you know, you're not going to defeat them through some electoral approach. You're going to have to fight them in the same way they're fighting and expose them. One point I should make, and it's an important one, the media is complicit in all this right-wing stuff. Most of the mainstream media reports these debates as though there's two sides to the issue. That is, both sides have problems, when in fact there's only a right-wing side and people trying to figure out how to respond to them. So instead of exposing and attacking them, they will just try to say, well, this is one side. Claudine Gay may have plagiarized, which she didn't really, because anyone knows about writing articles or publications or books. You have references, and you can try to pretend that that reference didn't cover everything that was said. That would mean every academic book, every book that's been written would probably be called plagiarized by that definition. But that's what they do. That's what the right does. And then the media gives them cover. You know, they give cover to Trump. They give cover to those who are racist. This attack on gay, these attacks on public education. They're more than racist, but the root cause is racism because of the history of white supremacy in this country.
So far, Malik, we've talked about the power of the right and their attack strategy, which silences a lot of people, but it can be defeated. I think the way we can approach it is they have developed a very effective ground game that is in localities, but also at the national level. They have cooked up many, many people, many working class people, people from every station, to believe that the enemy is racial, it's gay people, it's liberals trying to teach our children that the U.S. is not the citadel of democracy, that the U.S. has been complicit in a lot of terrible action against democracy all over the world. It's very clear, even right now, they're complicit in genocide, although Biden is a little bit nervous about that. He still is selling their 2,000-pound bombs to use on civilians. In any event, the right has coked up these people to, in fact, attack. And they have a ground game. They have a movement. Of course, it's based on hideous premises and is vulnerable for that. Ultimately, people will understand it. It seems to me, though, the only way to defeat them is our own ground game that will overpower them. And I think it's possible. The American public actually likes its public schools. There's lots of impulses in ordinary people towards rejecting the right. And it seems to me we have to build a ground game that's more powerful than theirs, who will in fact go out and organize to defeat them.
Yes, I agree. The key to this is not to get caught up in the moment in the sense of some of the gains the right have made, but is to take a more historical approach to how to defeat what's taking place. I always like to explain to people is look at the civil rights movement or civil rights revolution. When the civil rights movement began, it really began in the early 20th century after the start of Jim Crow segregation. And very few people understood that the issues that were raised by the early leaders around just basic individual rights for black people could be the way to build a broad movement. But it did, and against lynching. Lynching was a common thing in the South and in this country. So that movement that began in the teens, it developed slowly, but by the time of the Second World War and afterwards, it became a mass movement. And that mass in the 50s was mainly African Americans itself in the communities, but then it began to be progressive-minded liberal white starters to support it. But you always had this contradiction. The contradiction was the blacks, and people are familiar with Martin Luther King, he would say the tactic they used was nonviolent disobedience, but he understood that you couldn't rely on the system to win. You couldn't rely on elected politicians. You couldn't rely on anything but your own actions and reaching out to others. And he also understood that you couldn't, when you were told to wait, you were told to slow down because of the backlash by racists or the powerful. He ignored it. He just continued to organize and mobilize. And then finally we get the laws in the 60s. And it's important to remember that it was two Democratic politicians who were the president, JFK and Johnson, who told them to slow down even then. But finally they recognized the movement was so large that they passed the big important civil rights and voting rights laws. Okay, but that was a long process of struggle. And at a time when most whites, liberal whites, didn't think it could go all the way and end segregation in the South. They didn't believe it. They thought you could modify it, but you couldn't end it. But a mass struggle made that possible. I think that kind of movement has to begin now around these issues. That is, you have to organize, make clear positions on racism, sexism, anti-gay bigotry, all the issues that were some gains were made, and say these have to be reintroduced, adopted. The 50-year-old abortion rights needs to be reinstated by Congress or the courts. Doesn't matter. You make your demands against the system. Civil rights, voting rights has to be reinstated. And I should make a point about voting rights. Right now, voting rights are being taken away in all the states. People think, well, the voting rights, just the MAGA. No. Every state, they're making it harder for people to vote. When you make it hard to vote, they mainly target black people. And then it goes to Latino people. Then it goes to, students and liberals. That's already happening. Most of these states that once were Jim Crow are passing laws. So even if you try to vote, you have the majority, your vote may not be counted. So that's what we're dealing with. But the lesson is to go back and look at how it was won in the past, build a movement like that again, directed at both parties, not just the Republicans, but the Democrats who'd like to say, wait, we'll deal with it. Slow down. Don't fight back. And then push it and push it hard. If that happens, we can make gains, and it will happen. The reason I know it will happen because it's happened in the past. But I don't focus on the 2024 elections. A lot of people say, well, we got to make sure Trump doesn't get reelected. Well, that's the wrong approach. The civil rights movement never said, let's focus on electing LBJ while they were fighting for civil rights. There were some liberals who said that. King and others just ignored it. They kept pushing hard. That's got to be the same approach in 2024. Push for what's right. Whatever happens with the election will happen, and the fight will continue in the non-electoral form for victories to be won. So that's how I see what needs to be done. I think it will happen, but there will be many who will try to derail the movement as it begins to grow because they'll say, stop demonstrating, vote for Biden, who is not really a Democrat, by the way, small d. I mean, he says that. But what has he really done for black people, Latino, in reality over the last 3 years? What is he really doing for migrants? What is he really doing for people around the world, particularly in the Middle East, where he ignores the slaughter of Palestinians? So his movement, his campaign will do what it will do. We should just do what we have to do, which is to fight on the issues and demand that the government city, state, and federal take the correct positions.
Alec Mia, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Okay, thank you.